Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
Welcome to the Triple M Sunday Rub for McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Massive game of footy coming your way today. The Tigers hoping to shore up a top four. The Hawks hoping to keep in touch with the top eight. Joe Roughhead's 250th game. It is wet at the MCG, really, really wet. So if you're thinking about driving, don't, because the majority of the car parks are closed. Junk on public transport. Big 2.5 hour preview coming your way today on the Sunday Rub. The GWS had a nice win yesterday. Their skipper, Phil Davis, will join us. DJ Ben Stratton from the Hawthorn Football Club will be live here in the box. Justin Lepich from Richmond. A lot to get through. Wayne Carey is bringing a world exclusive to the Sunday Rub today. So there is a lot to look forward to. Firstly, yourself, Duck. Wonderful to see you.
Well, it's going to be a world exclusive because I don't even know what it is.
That is how exclusive this story is. Even Duck's not aware of it yet. Jay-Z is in the building. Nice to see you as well, Jay-Z.
Hello, Howie. A couple of big issues bubbling away. We'll get to them soon. But I did see Duck walk in with a big juicy kebab before. Now, he's claiming to be on this sort of fitness regime.
Chicken, lettuce, tomato and a bit of chilli sauce. That's
looked,
it. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay. The other thing he walked in with is I welcome Wayne Schwoss.
Hello, Howie.
And I welcome Paul Ruse. Is Howie. Duck walked in with an umbrella. Now, it's a wet day. A couple of weeks ago on the breakfast show, I actually did a list of 10 things I think the modern man should never do. I copped all sorts of criticism for it, but number one on the top of my list, boys, was you should never, as a modern man, use an umbrella. Where do we sit on this?
Do you use an umbrella?
Yeah, you would be.
Yep.
Jay-Z?
Never.
Good, good. Ruse, you would use an umbrella.
I actually didn't use an umbrella. My wife asked me to take one. I didn't. I had the jacket hood over the jacket. So I'm sort of 50-50.
Well, Duck, you're just not happy to just get out there and get wet?
Well, not when you're sort of thinning a little. I'm an umbrella man, to be honest, Howie. And to be honest, I heard that segment that you ran with and using moisturiser and all that sort of stuff. Maybe you should do yourself a favour and whack a bit of moisturiser.
Well, I don't think it was more. It was the umbrella, the scarf, the drink, cup of tea. Anyway, I digress. Ruse, you've come in a little bit rattled this morning.
Well,
you've got a little bit of criticism at home this morning.
It's funny because on the back, I was in the car too, and I heard your 10 points. And I was up and about this morning because I've gone back to back in the quiz. The family, off my back a little bit. So I was up and about, having a coffee, about to leave the house, and Dylan goes, "Dad," and I've sort of gone, "Why do you have this look?" He said, "What about your fashion?" I've gone, "Hang on." He goes, "Well, it's not bad and it's not good." And I've gone, "Well, I'm going to footy, mate." He goes, "Yeah, I know, but..." He just shook his head. So I went, I had to go back upstairs and change. I had to put the Ralph Lauren, the Calvin Klein,
This is the change look.
This is the change
look.
I was going to the footy, though.
You're a big Jerry Seinfeld sort of sneaker and jeans top style operator, aren't you?
Well, I was going to the footy and I sort of thought, but gee, I tell you what, it's just the pressures. Just when I thought the release valve of back-to-back quiz wins, and all of a sudden the fashion stuff comes out. So I jumped in the car, bottom lip down. Yeah, it's a little bit flat on the way here.
You are here, though, and unfortunately Wayne Schwoss wasn't here last week. I thought there was a big family issue developed, something not to be laughed about, but apparently you weren't here last week, Wayne Schwoss, and I've been informed you weren't here because of party planning duties. Surely not the case.
It's good to be back. My twin girls turned 14 last week, so we had a twin 14-year-old party.
Oh,
wow. And it started at 50, it ended at 70.
Oh.
And I had to stand on the door with my cycling mate, Trent, and...
with your lycra on?
No. We stood at the door and we were security and we had a balcony out the back, which I'll get to a little bit later on, but a little bit of makeup and some clothes other than school clothes. And boy, oh boy, some of the familiar faces were not familiar at all. If you're going to have it at 14, because the parents turn up on time at 11 o'clock. It was like shoveling the cattle into the cattle truck on the way out. Couldn't get them out quick enough. It had to go into a couple of dark corners along the balcony on the outside. Sure, a couple of long-headed louts drift out there a little bit later on in the evening.
A bit of pashing.
No, because the moment I stuck my head out there, whatever was going to happen didn't happen, so I shuffled them back in. The disco was happening. That was a good night, but I'm glad to be back because it's... yeah, it's an interesting experience to go through.
Oh, if they're 14, wait till the 16-year-old party.
No, that's it.
Oh, that's it.
That's it.
Now.
Not having it. You can have a party when you're 35.
That's what Corey Worthington said. And look what happened as far as he rolled it out. All right, let's get into today's games of footy shortly. But, Jay-Z, we need to look backwards before we look forwards. A big incident last night in the North Melbourne game v Collingwood. For those that haven't seen it, describe what happened. You've got a lot of audio to come, and this is a big, big story.
Well, it was very similar to what happened between Patrick Dangerfield and Matthew Kruse last week, which we all heard a lot about. Brody Grundy tackled Ben Brown, the big North Melbourne forward, arms pinned, and Ben Brown's head hits the ground. So he's concussed in that incident, goes to hospitals, gets out at 3 a.m. this morning. So he was under observation for some time. And now, because of what happened last week and the very strong stance the MRP took on Patrick Dangerfield, Brody Grundy absolutely has to go. There is no wiggle room in this, boys. He will be suspended for a match, I believe, 2-1, because of what happened last week. But it presents a bigger problem, boys, because now we've got coaches saying that this is the perfect tackle, yet the MRP saying, no, it's not, and we're going to suspend players for that. So, in fact, let's have a listen to the coaches first. North Melbourne coach Brad Scott and Collingwood coach Nathan Buckley on this very issue.
It was a pretty good tackle, rewarded with holding the ball. Clearly, when you're tackling someone from behind with momentum, there's going to be a little bit of carry on. It's hard to put yourself in reverse when you've got no friction to do it. So we understand the lay of the land and the way that precedence has gone in recent weeks, and Dangerfield's a clear example of that. But I don't know how closely related Brody's tackle is to that. It was a perfect tackle. Perfect tackle. I don't think there was any malice in the tackle. He was tackling to dispossess, tackling to get the free kick, the way the rules are written. So what more do you do?
Buck said just before that it was, in his opinion, the perfect tackle from Brody Grundy. Would you say the same thing in terms of arms pinned?
Nope.
How... sorry, what was...
<He's>... okay.
So huge contrast there between the two coaches on The View. And Brody Grundy was quite rattled after the incident. This is him speaking on Channel 7 after the match.
There was no malicious intent. That's not the player that I am and the brand that I want to get across. So, yeah, I feel pretty sort of shaken up after it happened, and was pretty happy that they stopped the play because I was sort of didn't really know what to do. And, you know, it's terrible to hear he's gone to hospital, so I'll definitely reach out to him tonight.
But in saying that, Brody, you're taught as a footballer when you do get someone and you can tackle them to take them to the ground, and that's what you did there. So technically you've done what's been asking you, and it's just unfortunate that Ben's been hurt.
It is hard. I suppose the thing for him is he had the footy and probably just didn't see me coming. And like I said, there was no malicious intent in that. And for me, I'm a bit of a lover, and I feel terrible about it.
Game is in a confused position, Paul Roos, because do you agree that he has to go for that?
Oh, there's no wiggle room whatsoever. And I must admit, it probably wasn't until I read the actual rule as it was in the Herald Sun last Monday. So as a coach, I think you could see the confusion, because often we don't, we'll get emails, to be fair, the AFL, we don't really read the letter of the law. But when because I was interested in the Dangerfield, as we all are, and I said, well, okay, what is the rule? And when you guys pointed out, I think there was... It's clear.
Yeah.
The arms were pinned and you're in a vulnerable position and your head hits the ground. So what Bucks is saying, if he's teaching, and this is not to be critical of Bucks, but if he's teaching Collingwood that's a perfect tackle, well, he's doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Because he'll have a lot of players that are reported over the next 12 months. There's no wiggle room whatsoever. Arms were pinned, vulnerable position, knocked out. Duck, it's a week.
Yeah, I thought it was a different to the Dangerfield one, where Dangerfield carried on, the ball had spilled out a fair while ago, both arms pinned, and there was a bit more of a driving action in that tackle, whereas this one I think is a little bit different. I actually think he'll get off. I don't, and because we're only saying this once again because of the consequences, because he was knocked out. If he just gets up, nothing at all gets said about that. And once again, and I know we say that week in, week out, but I do think there was a difference in that one compared to Dangerfield's.
Yeah, the problem is, Duck, the rule. The rule doesn't give you any...
But the rule, that's why the rule pretty much covers everything.
That's right, exactly. There's no wiggle room. The rule states, if you're... Correct me if I can't remember.
Arms,
your arms are pinned, if you're in a vulnerable position, then you're in trouble. So there's no wiggle room whatsoever.
He was, because his arms were pinned.
Were
couldn't
pinned.
Break the fall. He couldn't protect himself. I'm with Roosie here. I think he'll get a week. But it's contradictory, because it's the perfect tackle. We think that he'll get a week because of the interpretation and the way that that's applied. But Brody Grundy got a free kick. he gets a free kick. He's not penalised because of that tackle. And I think one of the other things, and we were having a chat prior to coming on today, and Roosie's right. I think that if coaches are instructing players to do that, then they're actually contributing to the issue that Brody Grundy now faces. But having said that, when you're in the process of tackling a player and you understand that the player is vulnerable in the tackle, it's an automatic thing. You're not consciously going out to maim somebody or hurt somebody. But when you're in the process of executing a very good tackle and you know someone's susceptible or vulnerable in the tackle, you'll carry on a little bit more. You may put a little bit more effort into the tackle. And unfortunately for Brody, Benny Brown was knocked out, and that's a problem.
I'm not sure how much attention we should be paying to whatever coach says in this situation, though, because they're clearly conflicted. Yes. You know, they're talking about the stripes they're wearing.
Yeah,
well,
if it was
enough.
Reversed around the other way, they both saying the opposite thing.
Yes. But in saying that, Howie, Jack Zeeble said after the game last night, I'm confused. He sort of said, I don't know what we can sort of can and can't do now.
He was lucky because he tackled Adam Treloar on the outer wing, and Treloar's head hit the artificial turf.
Yeah.
If he had stayed down, Jack was in a spot of bother.
Just wasn't hard. What it needs to happen.
So that's the issue there as well, Schwatter.
It happens 20 times a game.
So should he face the same penalty, even though Treloar doesn't get knocked out?
But that's the discussion, Duck. We all know the outcome dictates the penalty.
I know.
We all know that, and it's wrong, but that's the reality of the way the MRP see it. If Cruiser didn't get knocked out last week, Dangerfield wouldn't have got a week. But Ben Brown has been knocked out, taken to hospital, and regardless of whether there's a different type of tackle in terms of the rules are clear. I completely agree that the outcome shouldn't dictate the result, but that's exactly the way the MRP looks at it.
To make that consistent, then the rule needs to be changed. If that happens, then that's a free kick against Brody Grundy as well.
Well, it's supposed to be a free kick, but you're talking about one team getting rewarded and the bloke getting potentially a week, which is confusing.
So what would you do, Roosie, if you're at a footy club this week? So let's just assume that Brody Grundy gets rubbed out. How do you coach your players this week? What would you say?
Well, I must admit, when I was coaching Melbourne, and I hated players taking opposition to ground because it takes you out of the contest. Ah. We taught, and I don't know what they still do now with Goody, I taught the players to keep their feet, drive through the tackle, and don't take them to ground. Because then what happens is, if you're trying to do that, if I tackle Duck and he's stronger than me and I'm trying to take him to ground, he can actually fend me off. I end up on the ground, he ends up with a handball. But if I drive him backwards, even if he gets a handball out, it's off balance, it's potentially inaccurate, it hits the ground, and then we have a chance to pick it up. So I never taught my players to take the tackler to ground.
It's an interesting one, and it's going to cause a lot of debate. We'll move on from it because we could talk about it for
just
hours on this particular issue.
Trying to get my head around Roosie laying a tackle on Duck. I don't recall that ever happening.
I'm pretty sure it would have. Yeah, you would have.
It would be interesting if the AFL, sorry Howard, just puts out any sort of statement or clarification on this week, because clubs and coaches are going to say, we don't know what's legal or not. So the issue there is the AFL don't currently have a football operations manager.
But the issue, JZ, is a bigger issue. Sorry, Howie. The issue is, and without banging on about the rules of the game and the AFL, et cetera, et cetera, the one rule that they absolutely nailed was the ruck circle when Neil Danaher, as president of the Coach Association, went out to Princes Park, took coaches with him, players with him, umpires with him, I believe, and they practiced the centre bounce. The one rule they've got right. They've never done that again. So what does that tell you? If I'm going to create a rule, I would rather have Alistair Clarkson there, John Longmire, Nathan Buckley, and Paddy Dangerfield, Joel Selwood, Jared Roughhead. Let's take it. Okay, let's. Plenty of time in the off season to be able to do it, and then you get it right.
Mm. So the AFL seeks some feedback from the clubs and coaches and playing first about how they want this rule to be applied.
The next billion seconds are the most important in human history as technology transforms the way we live and work. The smartphone, barely a decade old, has given billions access to information and capacities they've never had before. It's changing what we can do, and it's changing the shape of the future. So what does that future look like? Hi, I'm Mark Pesce, the host of The Next Billion Seconds, a new show on Podcast One. Join me as I speak to some of the brightest minds shaping that world, the people who are spending their lives forming that future. We'll hear about their work in helping shape those next billion seconds. Listen at podcastone.com.au or on the Podcast One app.
Tell you what, yesterday at the University of New South Wales Canberra Oval, the Demons kicked the first three, Roosie, and then the Giants banged on eight to lead convincingly at quarter time. They went on to win by 35 points, and we couldn't be more stoked to have the GWS captain on the line, Phil Davis. G'day, Phil.
G'day, mate. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, great to speak to you. After they kicked the first three, it was a wonderful first quarter of footy, and it looked like you boys really clicked, which is wonderful for you and the footy club. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was definitely much better football than the football we're wanting to play that we haven't been able to play so far this year as much. But, they started really well, and I thought we responded quite nicely, just adjusted a couple of things. And, kick eight goals in a quarter is rare, but a very nice treat.
Phil, look, it's hard for us on the outside because it's hard to know what you guys value as a footy club. But you touched on it before, you probably, I suspect, haven't played the footy that you'd wanted. But you've had 119 tackles. You've averaged 67 in the first 19 weeks. You've had 64 at half tackles. And you've averaged 33 in the first. Has it been a real focus that you just haven't been able to get right? Because I think the whole footy world thinks if you play like that, that's the level you need to get to win a premiership. And I guess I didn't actually see the game yesterday, but well done, because if you do that, clearly you have the talent to be able to, get to the pointy end of the season.
Yeah, no doubt. It's probably a part of our game that's probably been the most inconsistent this year. And, it's definitely not through a lack of effort. We've probably just been disappointed that our consistency hasn't been there, which has meant that side of the game, which we think is when we play our best footy, is at the forefront. Yesterday, I think we won the tackle count by 30, 35 or something like that. And to win the game was great. But, it's definitely part of the game that the best teams do really well. If that pressure around the source is so important, because one, you can turn the ball over in your forward half, you can score. But two, if they do get through, they're under pressure and you can turn it over in your back half. So it's definitely an aspect that, we've lifted. And I think also, to get the personnel back, like, get Mumford back on the weekend, Hopper was back, Canelio back last week. And we've probably got a bit more experience in there, and also fanatic tacklers, which I think really shown through yesterday.
Hey, Phil, you also had a bit of a makeshift forward line, and Brett Delidio, first game back, first game for the club in actual fact, first game in a long time. How did he pull up, and how do you think you handled the fact that it was a very different forward setup?
Yeah, Duck was obviously a bit of a different forward line with us about, Cameron Patton and Green down there. And, we probably, with Lob down there, and then, when he went in the ruck, Mummy down there, we sort of definitely had to change. We're probably definitely a much smaller forward line than usual. And that probably was one of the reasons why we had to do such good forward half tackling numbers. It was different, 27 scoring shots from, 50 inside 50, 51 inside 50s was obviously good return. And we found different ways to score. We got a few from the goal square, a few running back to goal, and we didn't rely too much on the big contested marking like we do some weeks.
Hey, Phil, have you played with a more imposing, intimidating player than Shane Mumford when he's on song like he was yesterday? I think he had team high tackles and he was dominant around the ground, had a good battle with Maxi Gorn, but he's such a presence.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I think in terms of the aggressive nature and that want and desire to use your body, whatever it takes to win. I've never played with someone like that, I don't think. And, you could just tell his intent. Obviously, Max Gorn is arguably the best ruckman in the game. And, it was just a great duel between those two. But what separates Mummy from all other ruckmen, in my opinion, is his ability to get after it on the ground and get his hands free or get a tackle. And to have team-high tackles shows the sort of intensity that he brings. And, we obviously had the Dawson Simpson missed out after a great game the week before. And as hard as that decision was, you look at what Mummy was able to do and you can see why he's been one of the leading ruckmen in the competition for the last few years.
We're speaking to Phil Davis, the GWS captain on the Sunday Rub. Duck briefly mentioned Brett Delidio. I saw him in a press conference on Thursday. Phil, you couldn't wipe the grin off his face. How's he been through such a difficult time? You get to a new footy club, you want to impress, and unfortunately he hasn't been able to. Wonderful to see him out there yesterday.
Yeah, it was really exciting. And I just got to answer Duck's question before. He pulled up really well, which was great. He was fine. I went into the club this morning. He was cherry ripe. But as you say, it's very exciting for him. It's been a very challenging time. When you change footy club, you just want to get out there and play and really set an example in what you're going to bring to the footy club. And unfortunately, after the first month and a half, 2 months of pre-season, he sort of has struggled to get on the track. And, you know, we've tried so many things. And, you know, from my point of view as a leader, it was trying to keep him calm, because the worst thing you can do with soft tissue injuries is to rush it. And we just try to tell him that, you know, when he was right, he was right. And fortunately, it finally happened after periods there where I'm sure he doubted it. But, you know, his you know, personality was infectious on the weekend. And, you know, just that excitement to play footy again, I think he said during the week, was similar to his debut. He was that excited. And it's just great for the club. Obviously, he felt a lot of pressure changing club. But from our point of view, it's just great to get him. And hopefully he can build on what he was able to do yesterday and really get going by the time finals come around.
Josh Kelly outstanding again yesterday, Phil, potentially another three Brownlow votes for him. Interesting that Matthew Lloyd said that Josh had been withdrawn around the club over the past month and a bit. Have you seen any of that at all? And have you had a bit of a heart-to-heart chat with Josh about clearly the big decision he's making at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where Matt got that that whisper from, but I've actually noticed no change with Josh. I spent a fair bit of time with him, and he's been outstanding. I don't think I've seen a bloke at 22 years age who's so mature and carries himself so well. And, you know, no doubt, you know, when he has to put his mind to making a decision, it'll be a tough time for him. But no, he's been outstanding, I must admit. And obviously, his football hasn't wavered much this year. He'd always had a couple of niggles with his body. But he's just been outstanding. He's in our leadership group. He's a terrific young man. And, yeah, he's been great around the club. I haven't noticed too much of a change. And I think, you know, he's been exciting football for a long time.
Hey Phil, just before I let you go, I sit next to Paul Roos, a.k.a. the man that hates GWS. We've seen him blown up in recent times. Sheeds is into him. Dave Matthews is into him. Is it uncomfortable for you to be on the same phone line as a man that just detests your footy club, Phil?
Well, I must admit, the great thing about being in Sydney is I actually don't see much of the media. So Paul would know that for his time in Sydney. So,
yes,
Paul, correct. Just give us a little bit of love. That'd be fantastic.
I've given you love all year. I made one comment. Dave's very sensitive. Can you just tell him that for me? I love Leaping Leon. I love the way he nearly broke his hand yesterday when he smashed the... Did he smash the desk or something?
He hit the wall.
Did he get into... The medical this morning, Leon Cameron? Did he go and check in or not, Phil?
I think he just brushes those on. Those senior coaches are pretty tough. I think that's enough things in their time to get a bit of resilience through their hands.
Hey, Phil, we appreciate your good humour. Congratulations on a nice win and good luck moving into September for you and the GWS Giants.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Phil Davis from the GWS football club. It had to be brought up.
Can I just say, he's a star, Phil Davis. Yeah. He doesn't sort of get the kudos that he should get. And I think it is at times, and it's often, we often say it, but those clubs away from Melbourne, there's players that just fly under the radar.
I reckon he's one of them. What he does, Duck, he knows exactly what he's good at and what he's not good at. And he plays to his strengths.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't do anything outside his capabilities, which makes him a very, very good player.
I agree.
And he's got good hair too.
Well, that's a matter of opinion.
No, and he's polite.
I like it. And he's happy to speak to you, Roosie. A lot of people wouldn't have in his situation after what you've been saying about the Giants all week. We turn our attention to the MCG. As I said, about 45 minutes ago, there were some heavy showers. No Jack Riewoldt up forward on a wet day. Richmond, happy or not happy about the weather conditions?
I think they're happy, yeah. I mean, it's always hard to tell, I mean, the wet conditions. But if you've got a forward line without Jack Riewoldt, and look, we've commented before that they are small up there, Duck, anyway.
Yep.
I thought Toby Nankervis did a really good job last week anyway. But their strength is clearly with Jack as their target, who's not playing, and their smalls at ground level have been absolutely amazing. So the weather certainly wouldn't affect Richmond, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the great strengths of this team this year is they're a good team.
Mm.
They don't rely on anyone. And Jack Riewoldt's out and they'll, you know, someone will come in and do their job. And I'm a bit like Chris Scott in this area, though. You don't just replace him with someone as good as him. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. But I don't think that... I certainly think they can cover him, yeah.
Be a magnificent game of football. Really looking forward to it. No Hodge. Just disappointing when he's only got so many games left, Swatter. But
these conditions, I don't know about you, Roosie. You would have liked them. Swatter, I love playing in wet conditions. We don't often see too many wet games anymore. I used to absolutely love it.
I'll tell you, if it, as a defender, you used to look out the window and go, oh, geez, I hope it's raining today. But I reckon that the thing is, you don't see it all now, is the muddy conditions were good too, because the ball would get sticky.
Yeah.
And you'd be able to mark it really, really well. Not that we see much mud on the ground these days.
Up next, though, Roozy story time. We're talking Irish Tour. Some disappointing information this week that's come to light for me, that Roozy story time with Roozy is possibly going to be spun in the next month or so into a money-making situation. It's a star story that started here on the Sunday Rub. I'm hearing that Roozy story time is going to be put in print.
Ooh. Book.
Or possibly. A movie?
Do we get
a
credit?
I'm not sure. We're talking about a movie. We'll find out if there's a book coming out next. I don't know about a movie, Roozy. Maybe a little mini-series. Now, just going into the break, I was, as I said, I alerted to the fact that possibly there's a book coming out. Roozy, is this true? And is it called Roozy Storytime?
No, it's not called Roozy Storytime. But yes, there is a book coming out, and I'll bring you guys a copy in a couple of weeks' time. So stay tuned for that. That's very exciting for
you. Can we give a little teaser of what it could be about?
Not quite yet. Just stay.
Oh, okay. I've gone a bit early on that one.
Gone a little bit early.
Can you sign mine?
I'll sign yours, Duck.
But you're expecting a movie deal off the back of the book, is what you're telling me.
I'd be very surprised if it didn't come.
Who would you like to play you?
Actually, that's not a bad question.
Would be the second.
I'd just do myself.
Would be the second. Would be the second.
Keanu Reeves.
About Robert Reeves.
Yeah. I like that. I'd say John Wick. Very good. Have you seen John Wick?
Yeah.
Very good.
You'd be the second Triple M person that's been involved in the movie because our man Brian
was
last Captain Darwin.
Last Captain Darwin.
A non-speaking role.
Last Captain Darwin.
And stuffed his lines up.
1987, Roozy. 1987. You'd played against the Irish in 86, I presume, but this is the first time you got the full international touring experience as a young man. How old were you?
Yeah, look, it was great. I think when you get to the end of your career, you reflect how the opportunities that AFL footy presented. And my son's actually just come back from Europe, and I think kids now travel. Everyone travels, everyone goes overseas, the gap year. But looking through the eyes of a 22-year-old that grew up in Donvale, that, you know, would go to jump on the train and go to Adelaide to play basketball. There wasn't a lot of travelling, so to get picked in the Irish Tour was unbelievable. And so there's a couple of things that really stood out for me, and I was fortunate to go with Purdy and Richard Osman, a couple of teammates. But to mingle with the greatest players in Australia was just unbelievable. You know, so we flew in, arrived in New York, pretty late one night. A few of the players went out. I actually went to bed. But again, looking through my eyes, next day you wake up, you walk out in New York, and for those of you who've been to New York the first time, and you're coming from Donvale, coming from Beverly Hills Footy Club, you walk out and you look up and you can't even see the sky. I mean, the skyscrapers, just the excitement about being there. And the first game, and I guess the VFL or AFL that is now very smart, the administrators are very smart. Why did we go to New York to play Gaelic football? I still don't really know. There's a big Irish contingent in Brooklyn and the Bronx, and so I think it was a good way for them to visit New York on the way to Ireland. So we played a game in the Bronx, which again, jumping on the bus, driving through Manhattan on the way to the Bronx, and we're talking 1987. You know, it certainly wasn't cleaned up back then, and looking out the window just to see it from a kid from Donbar High School. And when we arrived at the ground was wired in, and it was this tiny little ground. It looked like I remember watching Hogan's Heroes. It looked like the yard,
like a concentration camp.
Just looked like the yard from a prison camp back in, it was incredible. Wire around the outside.
Was it a baseball field?
No, it was actually a Gaelic football field. So this was the New York Gaelic Association's home field. So it was a Gaelic football field, but it was brick around the outside with wire on the top. And I'm going, wow, this is quite amazing. So we get in, and you're talking about, the cream of AFL football. The ground was just potholes everywhere. Absolutely one of the worst grounds I've ever seen. And I'd actually had a bad ankle, and I pulled out at the game at the time. And I remember, Purdy was there, and we're warming up, and I was standing there going, geez, I hope no one gets injured on this ground. So it was a cold day. Yeah, everyone sort of had the tracksuit pants on to warm up, and just game time. Purdy's pulled his tracksuit pants, just about to take them off. The only problem was he'd actually forgot to put his shorts on. So he had to race back into the rooms. Thankfully, the rooms weren't too far away. Put his shorts on. And I remember, because I was standing on the the boundary line, and these new hard New York, Brooklyn, you know, Bronx guys, and you know, the skill level, we were better, but we couldn't kick the ball. Anyway, I remember I was standing next to the timekeeper, and there's about 5 minutes left in the game. They kicked an over to put themselves in front, and the coach ran up to the timekeeper, the Irish coach ran up to the timekeeper and said, "Blow the siren, blow the siren." So they blew the siren, they beat us. But we were probably as happy as they were because we just wanted to get out of there. And they turned out to a great bunch of guys. Fantastic. Fly to Dublin, play in the series. And I ran with actually Andrew Jarman, which is great. So getting to know players from other footy clubs. So I'm in the room with Andrew Jarman one night. And it was back in those days, you know, when all those players were sought after from the Melbourne-based clubs. And it was a matter of, you know, they used to get the RX-7s and they used to get the Supras. And
he won the McGarry that year.
He won the McGarry, yeah. So he was really highly sought after. So I'm in the room and I can't remember. We're both asleep. And the phone rings. And I look over and Jars is just, you know, dead to the world. So I rolled over, picked up the phone. I can't remember. It was either Stephen Goff, Gary O'Sullivan, or one of the Carlton recruiting blokes. It said, "Oh, look, is Andrew Jarman there, please?" Of course, jeez. And I had no idea what time
it
was.
Said yes, you're speaking to him.
I did. Well, what I did, Swatter, I actually woke him up. So I woke Jars up and I handed him the phone. I said, "Jars, it's someone from Carlton." Anyway, I rolled over and gone back to sleep, but I couldn't hear before I couldn't hear anything. I thought, geez, they've obviously. Yeah, they're talking and Jars is listening, and I lay there before I went to sleep. I rolled over. Jars is lying on his back. He had the phone in his hand. His hand was out here. And all I could hear was the Carlton bloke talking to Jars. So I picked the phone up, just put it back on the hook, and went back to sleep. So for all you Carlton supporters that were disappointed Andrew Jarman didn't come.
It's your fault. Sabotage.
That's the reason he didn't come. But look, great. I could go on forever about the trip. Great experience. We won 2-1 in Dublin. You know, to play at Croke Park, to represent your country, and the life experiences we had, meeting with other players was just, you know, it really was life-changing from that point of view when you realise how lucky you were back then. As I said, I know all the kids now get to travel and probably don't appreciate how fortunate they are, but for us back then, it was just amazing.
I totally agree. Having done that in 1998, yep. And that was the rebirth of it back then, and we've had a couple more since then, you know, off and then back on. But to, you know, go with all the champions, you know, Soss and Robert Harvey and Roo and everyone, you know, Sean Wren, all that. And it was the absolute best. It was the All-Australian team that year, the whole team that went. Yep. It sits right under premierships for me. Like, sits that close to a premiership. It's not funny. Best thing I've ever done.
Was there anyone from those experiences, Roosie, that you got quite matey with that you've maintained friendships with?
In my wedding party, Greg Anderson. Tony McGuinness. So Greg, I roomed with in 86 in the Australian one. Tony McGuinness went to Ireland. Absolutely.
Like, good hair.
And
Greg.
Andrew Jarman. We travelled. Who's that?
He had good hair.
Still got the... So we travelled after that trip. We flew back because the tickets flew you back via New York as well. So myself, Purdy and Ozzy were going to travel around by ourselves. Andrew Jarman, Daryl Hart and Matty Campbell had organised a trip as well. So the six of us travelled together.
They
became
all North Adelaide
all
boys.
All North Adelaide boys. Yeah. Really good friend. Had a great time in America as well. So absolute lifelong friend, Swatter.
Doesn't surprise that Carlton were ringing Andrew Jarman, given that their success with Steve Kernahan, yep. Craig Bradley,
Motley.
Yep. Naylor,
yep.
I think to Carlton as well.
Yeah, so, he did, yeah. Mark Naylor. Yeah.
A nice edition of Roosie's story time. I'm looking forward to the book that could be or could not be. We haven't quite nailed that one down, Jay-Z.
Just on that, Howie, the AFL very happy with the contingent of players who have indicated they'd be keen to play in this year's International Rules Series.
But it's here in Australia, though, isn't it?
Yeah, November 12 in Adelaide, November 18 in Perth.
Yeah. Skip the Aussie ones.
So I think there's going to be plenty of superstars in the Australian team.
We're looking close towards finals. MRP and injury becomes even more important. Big injury list yesterday, the one that caught my Easton Wood, grabbing the back of his hamstring, grabbing it high as well.
And the problem is with this, Howie, it could be a really bad one, or certainly that's the Bulldogs' expectation at the moment. He's the captain. He's a very important player, or a co-captain without Bob Murphy. So it could be the year done for him, which would be a huge blow for the Bulldogs, of course. So we'll wait to see the results of scans over the next 24 hours. But we are expecting to be bad. Also, Razio Fantasia hurt his hamstring yesterday.
Looked pretty bad, that one.
Yeah.
Well, when you're running at top pace and then it goes, it's a bit of a concern.
Wasn't that interesting with Cirioli in here? Actually, it was last Friday, wasn't Sunday? Cirioli was talking about the fact that he had to relearn to run and what the thing he has done. to avoid the hamstring injury which were plaguing him a couple of years ago. And he said he figured he was normally doing when he was running at top speed and bending down to pick up the ball. So he said he avoids doing that now. He either slows down to pick it up, but he just doesn't go at top speed bending down to pick up the footy.
And he kicks it off the ground a lot more.
He does. He doesn't like to bend over. Yeah.
He doesn't need to go at top speed.
No, that's right. No.
He's half speed as everyone else's top speed.
The other ones, I'll go through them quickly. Raisio Fantasia, he said, could be 4 weeks. Been such an important player for us. And then Levi Greenwood hurt his knee last night for the Pies. Maybe 3 to 4 weeks to him. Daniel Wells had a poor night last night after sort of flaring up. He's caught. He came in with a corky and then jumped. It was a bit of an unusual one, so he really struggled. In doubt for next week. And Joel Selwood's the really big one. Of course, the Cats take on the Tigers down at the Cattery next week, and he's in huge doubt. I would be very surprised. We know the guys are amazing how they can get up from these injuries, but he's in huge doubt to play the Tigers at the weekend, Howie.
MRP, some concerns. I noticed an incident once again. We spoke to Phil Davis, and we was talking about the aggressive nature of Mumford.
Yeah. Well, he collected Gawn, and he sort of came in and pulled his elbow in at the last moment, but still made a high contact for like his shoulder onto Gawn's head. Gawn goes off the ground, and I think he's going to get a match for this.
It's sort of like he knew he was going to make contact and then tried to avoid contact, but still invariably still made contact.
What there was a similar sort of incident last night with Tyson Goldsack, and was it Ben Cunnington, I think?
Yeah, Cunnington. Yes.
Because Goldsack came off, had to do the concussion test.
Yeah, so that's also a query. Ruzi, did you see the Gawny one?
I did see it. I saw it in a number of different angles. I'm probably a bit like Duck. I think he goes because of the rule, but it looked like he sort of thought, I'm going to get him. No, I'm not going to get him.
Yeah, and then sort of pulls out
by the time he actually made the decision to pull out, he was almost too far into the action. And then I think Max bent down almost at the wrong moment for Mummy. But I think once you clip him on the jaw, you are in trouble. I mean, the thing that saves him, which is the outcome for Gawn, is he went on and played well. So you wouldn't think it's going to be a major one. Yeah.
Still that he goes to the bench and gets assessed with contact to the head. They'll obviously look at it. The other, the last one is Zach Merritt. So one of the favourites for the Brownlow medal. He thumps Lockie Plowman in the chest. Now, he didn't get him really forcefully, but these are the type of off-the-ball incidents that the AFL wants to stamp out. We saw Brisbane's Dane Zorko get a match suspension exactly for this sort of incident last week. So if they're going to be consistent there, you'd think Zach Merritt might be looking at a week suspension, although it wasn't that harsh. And then Duncan and Tommy Hawkins again on Friday night were similar. Chris Scott almost called Tommy Papley out for staging, which was interesting from him. But it will be interesting to see what happens there with Zach Merritt.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts in starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Very nice to have this man in too. Premierships galore at the Hawthorn Football Club, wonderful moustache, big wave surfer, etc. Unfortunately not playing for the rest of the year. Ben Stratton joins us. G'day Strats, how are you going?
G'day guys, good.
Well, firstly for those that are aware, why are you not playing for the rest of this season? It's disappointing because we like seeing stars like you out there.
Just had a little knee problems and went in for a little arthroscope last week and just sitting the rest of the year out, getting it right for next year.
Oh, that's not good news, is it, Jay-Z?
Disappointing, Strats. We'd love to see you out there.
Hey, Benny, how's it been just watching the team evolve? I think we had Chip in here. I think Chip probably just after the bye talking about, getting back to being a contested ball team. Has that taken a lot of training just to reprogram the group? I mean, obviously you're still big on the uncontested marks, but there's a bit more speed in your game and looks like a lot more emphasis around winning stoppages, being hard around the contest.
Yeah, I think as far as watching the boys go about it at the minute, it's getting me pretty excited and eager to go for next year. So a lot's been said about the younger boys coming through and seeing those boys perform and getting games in them now for next year is going to be really good. And yeah, obviously the contested ball side of things, we've been training a lot at training, and it's good that it's coming out in the games because the boys have been sort of leading the way in that.
How about your involvement? So your involvement in some of those guys that have transitioned. I mean, Hardwick was a forward going back. I believe Burton, as it was a kid, was a forward going back. Have you had a lot to do, you and Chip and some of the injured players, have you had a lot to do with them in terms of video footage or just sitting down with them running through their games?
Yeah, well, it's funny. We've got probably four natural forwards down there at the moment that have kind of converted. Hardwick, yeah, with all of the pre-season he spent down back, so I spent a bit of time training with him obviously down there, and he converted really quickly just the way he reads the ball, as well as Sicily, the way he marks it. So kind of just let those guys evolve, and because they're forwards, they're natural markers of the ball, so it suits them down there the way we like to play. But yeah, as far as going through tapes and stuff, that's a good day-to-day thing. It's good for my leadership to be sort of teaching those guys as well.
Had a conversation with a Hawthorn friend during the week, and we were having the discussion. If Clarko didn't have as many premierships in the bank, would he have made the moves like Gunston and Sicily to go into defence, and I think Howe's gone into the midfield to tag? Would Alistair have done that irrespective? Is he the type of coach that's not afraid to throw the whiteboard magnets out and then put players in different positions?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the premiership side of things, whatever that would have affected him. I think just the way we were playing in general was not up to Hawthorn sort of standards, and something needed to change. And he sort of made a few moves, simplified the game plan a lot, especially with the new players coming in from other clubs and also the younger group. He sort of just read the group quite well and structured a game plan that's going to suit that and sort of started teaching him in a little bit different way. So, yeah, it's been pretty impressive the change he's made, but also the players following.
Tell us a little bit about Sicily. He's one of the younger players that you're talking about going down back. Fascinating watching. He loves the push and shove. He doesn't come across as looking real tough, but loves sort of acting tough out on the ground. Tell us a little bit about him. He's an intriguing character, I reckon.
Yeah, I think listening to the commentary last week, I think he got referred to as a young Dermot Brereton.
Oh boy, he'd love that.
So yeah, no, he's got a bit of fire in the belly.
Can he look after himself?
Yeah, I think he can. Okay. I think
he always wants to fight his teammates.
He wants to fight everyone.
I think, yeah, we want that aggression more towards the opponent rather than the teammates. But sometimes I think he just gets muddled up. But you know, we're not going to take away that sort of fire, and that what makes him such a good player. Just directing it towards the opposition would be nice.
So he's not the sort of bloke you want to belt at training, is he, or not?
No, he's actually very strong. Like playing against him as when he's been in the forward.
He's got, you know, he doesn't upset you blokes, and you know.
I think we get a bit of a kick out of it, a bit of energy from it. Yeah, he's not going to belt us at training.
I'll tell you what, he's playing some good footy.
Let's help him, definitely. Yeah.
Hey, where would you rate Sean Burgoyne? I mean, he's an unbelievable player. At 34, he came to the club with suspect knees, but what he's been able to do and continues to do is amazing.
Yeah, he's just sticking around and not only playing good footy, but winning games off his own bat, which has been pretty impressive to watch. And when you sit back and sort of, when I was spending a bit of time on the sidelines, you reflect on players you're playing with. Ruffy playing his 250 today. Hodgie played his 300 a couple of weeks ago. And Sean just, one of the greats by far.
I tell you, the other one is Ben McAvoy. I've always been a big fan of his. Obviously, Ross Lyon coached him. But the way he moves around the ground, I always felt that he maybe just didn't quite get to the heights that I thought. This year, having said that, this year looks like he's had a really dominant year and really, along with those, Hodgie and Ruffy and those guys, really led the team extremely well. How have you seen his season?
Yeah, I think, as you said, Rusey, probably a breakout year almost, because he's been on the verge for a long time. And I think with Jonathan Segler also being out of the side, it's given him that extra challenge of kind of being the number one, you know, genuine ruckman, and he's got the tank, he's got everything to go with it. So his year's been, he's been very impressive. Yeah.
On the tank, we had this debate the other night at Fox. Is he a 9.33k or is that too generous to him? Because he's a very good runner, isn't he, from memory?
Yeah, he's a very good runner. We do 2.2, and he's for a ruckman, he's definitely up there. But I think he just keeps going all day. He doesn't really tie. He's not, not up Isaac Smith standard, but he's very good for a ruckman.
We're speaking to Ben Stratton, injured hawk on the Sunday Rub.
Benny, he saw a little bit of training this week on Wednesday, and Jager O'Meara was moving quite impressively. Looked as if a return is not far away. Do you think within the next week we might see him at Box Hill, for example?
I think that's the plan within the next couple of weeks. I think all positive signs as far as the knee goes for him. And I mean, me as a player, us boys want to see him out there, but supporters as well want to see him. So I think in the next few weeks, it'll be exciting to see him out there.
250 games for Jared Roughead today. Just seeming from the outside, the world's nicest man. Is that the way he actually rolls? And he always puts on a good grand final post after party as well at his house on a Sunday morning. He's a much loved figure at the footy club.
Yeah, definitely. Roughy is he's a pretty special human. I think that's kind of how everyone rates him. And I've got to thank him for having those post sort of season celebrations, because he puts his hand up every year to do them, and they're very
enjoyable.
You've
turned up at those wetsuits. Have you worn wetsuits to those before the day after?
Oh, it's been a little bit of carry on at them. Yeah, I just try and keep it as low key as possible. But pumped to see Roughy out there playing his 250th. What he's been through, and hopefully has a good day.
What about Tommy Mitchell? Tell us, his season, new player coming to the footy club. Obviously, would have been aware of him when he played at the Sydney Swans, but how similar or different a player was he to what you perceived when he arrived at the club?
Yeah, for sure. I obviously knew a few boys up in Sydney, and they sort of said, look after this bloke. He's a really, really good fella and obviously a very good footballer. So, coming in, I suppose he's always found the footy just since a junior, and that's just what he does. And he's been a pivotal part in sort of accumulating in the midfield and replacing sort of, or not replacing, but the gaps left by Mitchell and co. So he's been pretty impressive.
Just talking about Mitch, he retired this week as a West Coast player. Paul Pierce got a one-day contract to go back and retire as a Celtic, where he played most of his NBA career. Is that something that you think the game could embrace? Because I mean, Mitch is a Hawthorn star, and he didn't have the number of people in Perth to come out and celebrate his career when he announced it during the week. It would have been nice if he had been able to get a one-day contract, come back here and retire as a Hawthorn legend.
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure. I think, is he going to coach somewhere? Maybe West Coast. So I'm not too sure we'd be embracing that too much. But, I mean, that would be pretty cool to see. But, oh, no, it's all salary cut, all that business. I don't know if it would work.
He could play.
I don't know if you'd need to pay for a day.
I'm just looking at the fixture, Swatter. West Coast play Adelaide last game of the year. Who do Hawthorn play? Western Bulldogs? Come back and play for Hawks against the Western Bulldogs.
They try to change.
They allow
business.
No. They allow.
They
to,
do.
They allow,
I, you're
Paul
right.
Pierce,
yes,
to come
they did.
Back and retire as a
Kevin
Celtic
Garnett
player.
Went to, back to Minnesota.
Not saying come back and play for the old club, but just to retire as a Hawthorn great, which he is.
It takes some clubs, Benny, years to rebuild, and we see Alistair Clarkson has done it within a matter of months at Hawthorn this year. It's been fascinating to see the changes made, etc. I know it's hard for his legend to grow anymore, but how have you seen Clarko roll up the sleeves this year and seemingly turn things around so quickly? I mean, has he impressed you again?
Yeah, I think he has, and he's probably impressed the outside world, but the boys kind of had a bit of a shocking start, and they probably needed something different, and I dare say it's maybe a blessing in disguise that we had maybe not such a good start, and we played a lot of these young kids. Maybe a few injuries with the senior players helped to get these young kids games, and now it's going to be benefit us next year and going forward.
Did you get schnitzeled? Can you explain the schnitzel experience down at Port Melbourne?
Yeah, that was
early.
That was early on, and it was early in the morning as
what
well.
What happened?
I think we'd got pumped by 80 odd points, and just got the call to meet down on the beach and in the dark, and we swam in from the pier, which was pretty terrible, and we did it again, and then, he just schnitzeled us, but he made us roll around in the sand and when we're all wet and sort of stay there.
Now I get it.
What were you thinking of that experience at the time?
I know all the young boys were pretty shocked, but we'd done it before about three or four years ago. So a few of the boys had been through it, but
the
young boys
were
very shocked. So I think a few of the Irish boys were like, what's going on here? What have I got myself into?
They'd never seen a boat before.
Why did he do that? It's a punishment?
I don't even know if it's the actual punishment. I think it's just probably just getting the group together and going through something, going through a little bit of pain where it was only, half an hour?
More annoying.
But
yeah,
you're all going through it together and I don't know, it probably creates a little bit of a bond and a bit of team spirit. But,
what's happening in the world of DJs? This is a very young, funky sort of box, this one, so we know with sort of the fat tunes that are bopping around town, don't we, Shorto?
I'm looking at Roosie and I'm
not sure that Bad lines Boy
up.
For Love. For
what
do
you,
anything about Bad Boy for Love?
What are you rolling with at the moment?
What am I rolling with? Bit of everything at the moment. Yeah, I've got a little bit of house and techno going, but I like all kinds of music, a bit of classical and stuff. So my tastes sort of stretch across a lot of horizons. But yeah, a few gigs coming up, but nothing too serious.
Oh, where can we see you play?
A few gigs in Fitzroy, one on Brunswick Street. But that's early October, so
okay.
Are you little, for higher strats?
A little bit of a spell, yeah. If you need
should
a birthday,
known. I missed him by a week. Could have had the 14-year-old twin girls' birthday party with strats. Exactly just right. Rocking the decks.
You got a funky DJ.
Bit of techno there, a bit dangerous.
Just before we let you go, I always like to keep an eye on what everyone's doing on social media. You don't tweet very often, but obviously you've got a mate that's a hairdresser at Mad Hair. Is this a mate of yours? You need to explain the difference because you tweeted 5 times about different haircuts. One was called the Modern Scumbag. One was called the Detroit Techno Salad, and one was called the Modern Mongrel Slice. Can you just tell me the difference between some of those haircuts? What's the Detroit Techno Salad?
I think that was just a shorter haircut that maybe you'd see in Detroit back in the 80s or 90s. But
otherwise known as short back and sides?
Yeah, pretty much. Just playing it up a little bit. But Timmy's a legend down at Mad Hair there on Malvern Road. But I don't use my Twitter too much just for pumping up Timmy.
Okay, I can see you with a Detroit techno salad one day.
Well, after my fashion cook that I got today, probably that hair will be the next thing.
Hey, Stretch, we really appreciate your time, mate. It's a shame you won't be playing again this season, but we look forward to seeing you in season 2018.
Thanks very much, guys.
All right, wherever you're listening to the Sunday Rub, if you're driving your car, pull over now. If you're out in the garden, take a seat, because Wayne Carey is about to bring a world exclusive to us, Roosie. You might notice if you listen to the Sunday afternoon football on the M's, which is what you should be doing, maybe sort of halfway through the third quarter, Duck occasionally just sort of loses attention. Swatter, he just loses interest in the football. And there's another topic that really gets him up and about and interested. Here's a bit of a snapshot before he goes with his world exclusive.
Can I just make a quick observation?
Yes.
Those fake kite eagles,
yes.
Seagulls have realised they're fake. They've all come down into the stadium again now.
Neil Duck's going to make a Seabus Super Special comment about the seagulls shortly.
Well, I reckon the seagulls have worked out that those kites are fake.
Just an update on the seagulls, Duck. There's some fake birds that you reckon the game's up.
No, there's fake eagles flying outside, and the seagulls are all over it now. They know they're fake.
I don't like to say this, but you don't get that on the other stations.
No.
Whether that's a positive or negative, I don't know.
The big bucks, Howie.
That's right.
Another little observation today. You know I'm fascinated by the seagulls at this ground. They're now flying around the Hawks up there. They're playing with the kites.
Oh, there he is. He loves talking about birds and duck. Boy. You want to take this to a whole other level today.
Well, I've tracked down the MCC spokesperson for seagulls. This man is the seagull expert at this ground. Shane Brown joins us. Shane,
afternoon,
tell us
Duck.
What's going on.
If I was a seagull expert, I'd have gotten rid of them by now. You know that.
So have my observations been... have they been correct?
Look, I don't think you've done every game at the G this season. Would that be correct?
No, that's true. That's true.
It does seem like every time you are on air, the seagulls do come in. So we are looking at a pattern at the moment between the Ducks' arrival and the seagulls' presence as well.
No, is that, let's just straighten this up a little bit.
You're talking about seagulls.
But just straighten this up a bit, because I specifically remember when I came to this ground, and I do like to look around the ground, this magnificent stadium, and I look around and I look up into the stands and everything, and then I noticed when the kites first went up, I thought, okay, yeah, beautiful, and the seagulls, well, there were none. And then they've just slowly coming back in. And now, last week here, there were hundreds of them flying around.
Taunting.
And they're actually taunting the kites now. So is it time to get new kites or bigger kites, bigger fake eagles or hawks or whatever they are?
Or snipers.
Because they're not working anymore.
Yeah, no, to be fair, it does have some merit, Duck, that at times they do come back. We've tried everything over about 8 to 10 years now. We had the real eagles and falcons up there for a few years. birds of prey to scare them away. That got a little bit difficult in terms of getting permits to actually be allowed to have them up there. So we went for the fake birds. You know, we'd have the wires we still have going across the ground attached to the roof. That seems to work quite well most of the time. But as soon as one seagull ducks under, the other 500 seem to get the word out and away they come.
Yep.
We had two fake bird kites at the start of the season, and then we had six for the last sort of 10 or 12 rounds, but we've had trouble in windy conditions. A few of them have blown away. So
Shano,
any suggestions you like from your listeners.
What about some drones, Shano?
We can't get drones up for any purpose, let alone seagull detection.
Take us inside the seagull's head. So there must be... I'm presuming there is some logic behind what you're actually doing. So take us inside the seagull's head. Why are you doing it and how are they getting around it?
That'd be the coach trying to put a bit of logic into the conversation. Hello, Rudy. We know that the trouble is we don't know why the seagulls come some days and other times they don't. There's some people have a theory about cold weather or night games or the amount of hot chips being eaten. So we could potentially look at putting a whole vat of hot chips out in Yarra Park and see if that deters them away.
I like that one.
Yeah, experts and scientists have no real theory behind it. There's no proven evidence as to why they do or don't come. So we're just trialling a few different things and just seeing what works.
We're probably at
a 50-50 rate, I reckon, at the moment.
Very good, mate. Thank you very much for coming on and clearing that up. I also want to just make a point. While we're talking about seagulls, I used to do a segment on Triple M many years ago. I had my own radio show. It was called Pig Jimmy Rooboy. Well, it wasn't just mine. It was theirs as well. Mm. And it used to be Wayne's Wonder of the Week. I used to have to come up. And one of them one week was, why haven't you ever seen a baby seagull? Has anyone ever seen a baby?
Must have been a good show that one, no? Surprised she's not still on air, that little arrangement.
Have you ever seen a baby seagull?
Actually, that is I don't want to say it, but that's not a bad question.
I've never seen one.
All right, Shane, we appreciate your time and good humour. And good luck with the seagulls.
Thanks, Shane.
He's gone. He's probably got other things to sort out. Nice exclusive, a world exclusive.
Hey, halfway through, Duck. Shano, if we can straighten it up, please.
We're talking about
seagulls. It was pretty serious stuff.
Oh, I thought he did a magnificent job. Well done to you, Duck, for getting in the bottom of that. No doubt in the second half today, we'll get a little bit more
but
of an
at least
update
we know.
You.
At least we now know that
nothing works.
My theory was right, and that is they've put extra kites up there, Swatter.
Yes.
Some of the kites flown away. What is interesting, and...
Are we still talking about this, are we?
Yeah, he sort of answered Roosie's question in a way. Once one gull gets past or sort of has the courage to go up to that fake, they all go, hang on, we're in this.
We're on to something. We're on to something here.
The Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
Running total in the back to school quiz. Jay Clark, 5. Paul Roos, 5. Wayne Schwash, 4. Wayne Carey, 4. So it's coming to a nice little conclusion. There's a big prize at the end of the season as well.
What is it?
Which will be announced over coming weeks once we've gone through the
stuffed
prize.
Stuffed seagull.
Pool. Yeah, it could be a stuffed seagull. You're always very important to your family, this, Roosie.
Well, good feedback. Firstly, about the quiz. This is from Dylan Roos. Okay, listen. I will listen now. Just remember how important this quiz is for the family. You won't get dinner if you lose. But some great feedback too, Duck, for you. Yeah. He's followed up. I said, quiz in 2 minutes. He's followed up. Yep, listening. Seagull segment, very good.
Thank you, Dylan.
There's a couple of boys pointing at me in the box. There's some concerns in this box.
You're a dodo.
Well, it's not so much me. There's some concerns that there's a member of the box that cheats.
Yes.
And reads over my shoulder.
He works for SEN now.
I always do sit next to you, Swatter. There's a theory in here that you've got
Jay,
a bit of the Lance Armstrongs about you.
No, not at all. I don't have to.
All right.
Definitely some glances at your sheet.
Right, You're inside his back pocket.
I'm trying to move all the way up the door here. Here we go. Back to school quiz. You know we like to start with the nearest the pin. And thankfully, MJ hadn't had 6 cans when he wrote this, which is what he had last week, and it got a little bit obscure. All right, nearest the pin. Richmond and Hawthorn have played 155 times. Who leads the all-time record and by how many games?
Roosie.
I'd
say Richmond.
Yeah.
By 21.
Richmond by 21.
Duck,
duck. Duck,
duck. 25.
By who?
18, Hawthorn.
18, Hawthorn.
Swatter. Hawthorn, 31.
31. And Jay-Z?
I'll go Richmond 10.
Richmond 10. The answer is Richmond 15. Jay-Z went Richmond 10. Roosie went
21.
I did 20.
You went 21, Roosie. So a little point early doors to Jay-Z. Okay. Geography. Two pubs sit directly opposite Punt Road Oval on Punt Road. Name the two pubs.
JJ.
The
Royal.
Which is the topless bar. Surprise, surprise, the journo snagged that one right off the top, just quietly.
He tried to say it as though he didn't know it.
Is one called the Royal, baby?
The Royal.
Hello to Mr. Jay-Z out there who's listening. And the second one would be?
The Cricketer's Arms.
That is correct. Good get. Jay-Z shoots across to two, just sort of really working in his.
I really should have said them in the other order.
Yes, possibly. History. How many goals did Dunstall and Brereton kick combined in the 1991 Grand Final?
Swatter.
It was out at Waverley against West Coast. Swatter.
11.
11 is incorrect.
Duck. 9.
9 is incorrect.
Ruse.
Roosie.
7.
7 is incorrect.
Say 8.
It was 10. Dunstall 6, Brereton 4. No winners there. Okay, we go to round 7, 2016. Guess the player.
Now, under no real pressure, pops one.
What?
His name written all over it, Chief.
JJ.
It's a Hawthorn player.
Oh, it's Paul Pioppolo.
Yes.
Your boy's playing on
it. Pioppolo! Puppy!
Hey!
Oh, what a grab!
He wasn't going to go with Paul Pioppolo. Oh, no.
He didn't
idea,
even have
did
the
you?
Right team.
You're still
who are you going
of,
with?
You're just Paul thinking Pioppolo. About your
who
first
are you going with?
Royal Hotel. Pioppolo.
JZ, 3, everyone else, zip. Okay.
Test your buzzer, Schwatter.
All right.
Get stuff.
I like this one. Which Richmond player's last name is kind of, sort of, a little bit golf related?
JJ.
Yes.
Josh Caddy.
Oh, yes. JJ.
Have we ever had a clean sweep?
I don't think. It could be an extra point for a clean sweep, too. All the other blokes have to run around nude. Let's give an extra point. All right. During the week, who said this?
I'm going to tell you one Collingwood premiership player, but I know who won the last person to win a Collingwood Brownlow was.
Hurry up.
Sam Mitchell.
No.
Swatter.
Dane Swan it was. One.
Good work, Swatter.
To Swatter.
Really,
okay, who am I, which is Duck's area of expertise. I was born on the 5th of May, 1958. I played 240 wonderful games, kicking 130 goals. I am a 5-time premiership player. I spent a fair bit of time on the boundary after retiring. In 1986,
Ruse.
Dipper.
It is Dipper. But the winner of the quiz with 4, Ruse 1, Schwatter 0, Duck 1, is Jay-Z. Well done, Jay-Z. Jay-Z now leads on 6.
Ruse didn't
just
get one.
Oh, Duck got one. I got one. And the bloke
know,
is going to the Royal Hotel at 5 past 6 tonight for a couple of jars and a pot.
I get to really... Who am I every week?
Well, they're the $25 specials,
the
too, on the old...
Yeah, I know.
All
harder
right.
ones.
Now, a little bit of news floating around. Gee, there's some discussion about this man, Lever from Adelaide, Jay-Z. You've got a little update on that, and it'll probably just expand the story a little bit, too.
Yeah, well, I think if we have to call it now, it does look like Jake Lever and Mitch McGovern will leave Adelaide. Of course, the Crows trying very hard to recontract these two very good players. But news came out last week that Jake Lever had met Melbourne, senior officials from Melbourne, and I dare suspect he may have met some key people from another club as well. But that's potentially another story. But for me, it's interesting, Roosie, because is the game happy with this or not? So we've got a player 3/4 of the way through the season. Finals are just a month away, meeting with another club. Is that good? Or do you accept that or not?
Well, I think the twice that it's happened with Travis Boak with Geelong and Lin Jong last year, there was general uproar, correct me if I'm wrong. So that would suggest that no, as an industry, we're not happy with it because it caused furor last time. So I think the managers are there for a reason. The managers are there to manage the players. And I think we all acknowledge that the managers are going to be talking, and rightly so, on behalf of the players. And then whenever the season finishes... then the player meets the particular clubs.
In saying that, though, isn't it fair for a player to want to get a feel or, you know, to want to meet someone to find out more about the club? If they're making, you know, a $3 million decision where Jake Lever's going to play the next, you know, 6, 7, 8 years of his career.
Well, yeah, but when's the trade period start?
Well, it's October.
October. Yeah. When's the season finish?
But Adelaide is putting pressure clearly on Jake Lever to make a decision now. How can he make that decision without all the information?
Have to. He can stand his ground.
Doesn't have
he can
to.
Default to his manager.
Jake Kelly at GWS, for example, he's under pressure because GWS need to do all their other deals.
I know that, but players have the right, as clubs do, to make their decisions when they're comfortable doing it. I don't think the talent should ever negotiate the deal, and what I mean by that is Jake Lever or anybody else should be meeting another football club during the
season.
You
don't like it either, Schwab.
I don't like it. If Roosie's my manager, Roosie, you do your job, I'll do my job. I'm going to concentrate on footy. You have the preliminary discussions. Then when the time is right, and I as the person who may think about moving, I might then want to go and talk to a footy club to get an understanding of what's your culture like, what's your strategy like, who are you thinking about bringing in, what are your plans for the future. Then I can make an informed decision, but I don't think the players should go to another club.
I think let's put a different spin on it, JC. Maybe Jake Lever's, and we'll just use Jake Lever as an example. So Jay-Z's with his manager and someone from the football club. It can't be a coach, it can't be. But let's say someone from the football club meets Jake Lever and the manager at the manager's office.
Yep.
Okay, maybe that's acceptable. But what I think we saw with Geelong is flying over to...
Travis Boak.
Yep. What we saw with Lynn John going through the Collingwood facilities. So maybe there is an opportunity based on what you're saying. To be fair, we don't actually know what clubs met with him and how they met and who met, things like that. So I think if a player is thinking of there's a possibility to be able to do it in a certain environment with the list manager at Collingwood or Melbourne or Bulldogs or whoever, perhaps we can get away with that. But I don't think we can have players going through facilities.
Yep.
Yeah, clubs flying with the coach at Geelong was at the time. And
Bartel.
And why? Players.
What's the negative with
that? I've lived in Sydney, mate, and it's a disaster. I've lived through it in the rugby league. And
why is it a disaster?
Well, because our game is built on loyalty. And the ability, I agree with Swatter, the contracts run until 31st of October.
Correct.
That's when you're contracted till. So there's time to be able to do it. We're not asking players or clubs to work outside the contracts. What we're saying is, you're contracted. Is Jake Lever, McGovern, are they able to? Absolutely, they're able to look. I don't think there's a club that, and if the club's prepared to put pressure on the players, well, that's part of the player's decision too. And that's part of the club's decision. The player's well within his right to say, well, I cannot make the decision at that time.
Yeah.
Then the club's well within its right to say, well, we're going to have to go and look for another player. So the rules work as they are. Don't tamper with the rules. And let's not get to a situation where we're forcing players to make the decision. We went through it with James Frawley. James handled himself incredibly well. And to this day, I still believe he was still weighing up his options and he left to go to Hawthorn. No problems at all.
We spoke to, it does present the situation, if a player such as Mitch McGovern, Howie, has decided to leave, then it's a decision for, say, Adelaide's Don Pike, whether they're going to continue to play him for the rest of the season in the final series. We asked him this question last week. Pikey, two of the other very good young players, Jake Lever and Mitch McGovern, out of contract, a lot of clubs circling. Do you think we're mature enough as a game? And what's your footy club's view? Just say it comes to finals or whatever and they give the indication that they are going to go back home. Would you still play them? Would you have any issue playing them if you sort of knew that they were going to leave?
Oh, I think you'd assess it on the merits of each situation, to be honest. And you know, I think I'm not sure we've got to that point yet where players like in rugby league where they're sort of announcing almost in March, they're saying, oh, I'm leaving next year. That probably makes it more awkward, I would have thought.
But you guys are such in the window, aren't you? So sort of back in their professionalism.
And again, it's their commitment to their craft. I mean, they've spent a lot of time, a lot of energy around, you know, getting into a position where they want to, you know, play finals footy and obviously have an impact in that. So you'd be disappointed from a professional viewpoint if they'd moved into a different headspace.
Surely our athletes are professional enough to be able to separate the two.
Well, I agree with that, but Ruse, you think it's awkward?
Well, it is awkward. I'm telling you it is. Mm. And I've coached, so what I'm saying is, and this is where the clubs have got to be careful too, because if I'm coaching a team and I'm Don Pike I don't want to know they're going, because that changes my mindset. You could tell in that interview how awkward he was to answer that question, because it's an awkward question to answer. Do they want to win a premiership? Clearly. Are they a better team with Lever and McGovern? Clearly. Does he want to know where they're going? No.
Okay. So
No, he doesn't.
So if it comes to the first week of finals, you know as a coach that McGovern's leaving. You know he's in your best side. Are you picking him to play in the finals?
Well, I mean, that's the contentious one. I've always said if a player's leaving, he's left your club.
Wow.
That's what I've always said.
So you cut off your nose just by yourself.
Well, I'm not in the situation, and when I've been asked, generally it's been when I've been coaching Melbourne. What I'm saying, I don't want to know. Mm. All right?
But if you did know,
I'd be loathe to play him.
Wow. Why?
Well, he's not committed to your footy club.
But you're hurting yourself, surely, over the next four-week period.
But I'm saying he's not committed to your football club.
Because he's moved elsewhere. Well, you don't clearly. Think, therefore, he can put 100%
no, I
into
don't.
Your footy team for
I
the next
don't.
Month.
How would his teammates view him, do you think? Do you think they'd
well,
be
well, I mean, there's a whole... And I think what Don was saying, and again, it's very difficult. I'm sitting now in the commentary box. You know, I'm not coaching a team that's playing finals. But you could sense how uncomfortable Don Pike was answering that question. I think if you're committed to another football club, you can't be 100% committed to the one you're at. Mm. Now, is it 99? Is it 98? Is it 95? Is it 92? Is it whatever it is? You're not committed 100% to that football club.
Do you agree, Doug?
It's an interesting one. I obviously haven't coached. I probably lean to more towards if they're in your best team and you're playing finals. Completely different if you're not playing finals. If you're not playing finals,
yep.
then the decision's easy.
Yep.
Done. See you later. Play
which players. Which can't be to Lockie Henderson.
That's exactly right. But if you're playing finals, I'd probably lean towards saying, well, you know what, let's try to get the best out of what we can this year with you guys and then good luck to you. That's probably how I see it.
It's an interesting one. Rugby league seem to be able to deal with it. But you see a bloke win a grand final and you know he's leaving.
And Cooper Cronk's in that situation at the moment. He's playing okay.
But surely Cooper Cronk is going out there doing everything.
But he hasn't said, correct me if I'm wrong,
he's going to play.
He hasn't said he's going to play anywhere
but
else.
But historically it does happen in rugby league.
Yeah, but it's a bad... I'm telling you, they're not comfortable with it. It's a bad... How it's evolved, I've got no idea. It's a shocking look for the game. And they would agree that it's a terrible look for the game. But once... The problem you've got is in rugby league, once it's out there, you can't take it back. You can't take it back. So I'll ask you this question. So in 5 years' time, let's say Mitch McGovern and Jake Lever come out the week before the finals and say we're leaving. In 5 years' time, do you want to have 20 players coming out and then it extends to March, April, May, June? Do we want that as an industry?
No, Gil said that they don't want that.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
Time to welcome for the first time this afternoon on the boundary for Bob Jane teammate Sarah Fayor with one of our favourites here on the Sunday Rub. G'day, Sarah.
Yeah, g'day, Howie and A-Team. I'm standing here with Justin Lepich. Thanks very much for your time, Lepper. We were just chatting in the break there about the incredible belief that this team seemed to have in each other. And from the outside looking in, a lot of that stems from Dimmer and the personnel around him. I know you said when you first arrived at the club last year that the sky's the limit, and it really seems like it is.
Yeah, I guess so. We're in the situation now, lucky enough with our win-loss ratio, that it is. It's anything's attainable, but... can I say we've got to take it week by week, though? But we have to, unfortunately. We have to live in the moment, because if we don't look past the Hawks, who are in great form, you know, that stuff's irrelevant.
Now, Jack Riewoldt is a great character. We know he's a competitive beast, and he missed out last week with that. He copped a finger in the eye. And I've heard he canvassed a few different doctors, up to three, trying to get the all clear this week. Did he just miss out?
It wouldn't surprise me. He saw four or five, Jack. He loves playing. He hates sitting on the sidelines. He's actually been more annoying not playing with the forward group. But he's a beauty. He should play next week. There shouldn't be any issue now. He's done some running today. So that's the main issue, really, him just getting his body up and going. So he shouldn't be any dramas for next week.
Lepper, fantastic last week, I guess, without Jack Riewoldt. But your small forwards have been unbelievable all year. Have they surprised you a little bit as how they've been able to hang on? And the young players, obviously, they're going to be inconsistent, but their ability just to tackle and chase and harass has been unbelievable given the age of them.
Yeah, to stick at it as long as they have, Roosie, has probably been the surprise. I didn't know a lot about guys like Castagna and Butler, and obviously Bolton was new, and Daniel Rioli had played one season. So, yeah, there's a lot of unknown about it as far as our talent and what were we as a forward group. But they've been able to hang on and together work really well. There's weeks where the odd one doesn't play well and the other two step up and vice versa. So it's been a really good part of our game. We do play a turnover game, don't we? You win in a turnover battle, you tend to win a game. So they really help in that.
Hey, Lepper, how often has Rance been, well, not tagged, but a player has come to Rance and tried to take him out of the game like Riewoldt did a few weeks ago? Has that happened often this year? Obviously, we don't get to see you guys every week. Do you expect that today, and how often has it happened?
No, it was really only the Tringo one Port Adelaide game, and there's been times teams have tried to drag him away from the play. So we've just got to be, which is probably the next level from a hard tag.
Yep.
We just have to be conscious to keep our structure. He's really important as that last line player for us. He saves the day a lot of the time. So it's important that we can get him in that situation as much as we can.
How have you rated Brandon Ellis this year, Lepa? I wrote a story saying he was about to sign a new two-year deal and going through sort of where they expected to finish in sort of the best and fairest calculations. I almost had him sort of top five behind Koch and Dusty and Rancy and your big guns. Do you think he's had an excellent year?
He has. Probably his first month was slow. And then after about sort of round five or six, I thought just really the contested part of his game lifted, and he started marking the ball and winning not just the handball receive component of his game, but his contested game started to increase. And I think he sort of rounded him up as a player. And you're right, I think sort of since that point, yeah, he'll really be up there in the best and fairest, that's for sure.
Hey, Leper, David Asprey seems to have really elevated his game to a new level this year. I'd like to get your thoughts on how you've seen his season.
Yeah, well, he's one of those players that suffered from not having pre-seasons over a long period of time and really not having a fair crack at it. And he did this off-season. He had a really good pre-season and did all the work. And he's a terrific aerialist. Marks the ball back a lot for us. Often takes the big, heavy key forward, which enables Rancy to sort of do his thing. So he's incredibly important to our structure.
Actually, let's finish on Rancy because, as you can tell, I love the way he plays, Leper. But he hasn't got anywhere near your sort of capabilities as a centre-half back. Do you remember that day? Do you remember that day you played on me, Leper? Not going to believe this. I kicked five, centre-half forward. Leper kicked four from centre-half back. You've got to teach Rancy to get down the ground and kick a few more goals.
Well, I can't remember that day. we might have to talk about it later. In fact, it's got me a lot of free drinks, that story, so thanks for that, Doug.
Hey, Leper, we appreciate your time. Best of luck for you and the Tigers today.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Justin Lepich, lovely, lovely fella, and doing wonderful things down there.
I tell you what, I reckon he's one of the big reasons why the Richmond Footy Club are where they're at. He's a great guy and clearly knows what he's on about with footy. But that was, seriously, that day.
How did he get his goals?
Well, he's playing me on a 40-foot leg rope, so he just was doing his thing and I was doing my thing. We won the game. But anyway, he was a great player, Leper.
He could go
the other end and kick goals. He was a superstar.
Hey, boys, I came in today and something that caught my eye, and I said to you, I think it was a pretty black day for world sport, and you guys all raised your eyebrows at me. Usain Bolt had his last ever individual run at a world titles this morning. He got beaten into third position.
Is it sad that he got beaten?
Yeah, probably.
He was black caviar until now.
Yeah, he ran a 9.95. He's had a reasonably low-key pre-season, middle season.
I know, so why did he do it? I was just confused why he would do that, because he had a perfect record.
Well, it was his farewell tour. It was going to be his last world titles. He still runs again for Jamaica in the relay, but he got beat in the third position. Firstly, I want to explain to you who he got beaten by, but just have a listen to the call. The hardest thing you can ever do as a commentator is to call the 100 metres. It'd be fair to say the chap that called this probably didn't do a great deal of justice to it, but that's not why I'm playing it for you.
Away they go again. A really good start from Coleman. Bolt is chasing hard. Is he going to get back to him or is he not? Coleman is leading at the moment. Blake's coming, but is he going to run out of track or is he going to get there? I think he's been beaten. I think Coleman took it. There was not the usual surge from Bolt over the last 20 metres or so, and I do believe very, very tight indeed that it was. I think Bolt's been beaten. The result has come up on screen. The Gatlin's taken it. Goodness me.
So the commentator missed the winner of the race. In fact, didn't call him once over the 9.95
seconds. Was that the crowd in the background when the result came
well,
up?
Well, they were booing. They were booing. That's why I bring it to after. You. They were booing because the fellow that beat it to him, and that's why I said to you, I think it's a bit of black day in world sport. I think the biggest title you can hold in world sport is to be the fastest man on the planet. Probably the world heavyweight champion, especially in times gone past, but the world's fastest man is always a big title. The world's fastest man is now a man that was kicked out of the sport for 2 years in 2001, Justin Gatlin, for taking apparently, reportedly, amphetamines. And then in 2004, after he'd won an Olympic gold medal, he got a 4-year ban, found guilty of taking testosterone. So the now fastest man on the planet is a 2-time drug cheat.
So, but hasn't he served his time, Howie?
He has.
So, or is he, once you're a drug cheat, always a drug cheat?
No, he served his time, and I think it comes down to a reflection on the administrators of the sport that they have not put a situation in place where a bloke that has been done twice can be the fastest man on the planet.
Weak kneed, are they?
I reckon they are weak kneed. It's just not a good look.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, he's 30. How old is he?
34, 35. Fair
age. I mean, I guess the doubt in your mind, that's the biggest thing for me. I mean, he's clearly been caught twice.
Twice.
So he's run across the line first. The first thing that comes into my mind is, okay, how do you do it as a 34-year-old sprinter? I guess that's the difficulty with the sport now. And
well, I've got a 5-year-old at home, and he's saying, Dad, why are they booing him?
Yeah.
Oh, because he's broken the rules twice. Out of the mouth of babes. Well, why is he allowed to run in the race, Dad? It's the obvious question. Justin Gatlin can do nothing but run, but the administrators that put him in a position of being able to run, I think, I'm not too sure about that one.
Maybe you give someone a second chance, not necessarily a
third chance.
Yeah, I don't think so.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Now, we know the Brody Grundy MRP situation is absolutely going to dominate their headlines for the next 36 hours. And Roosie, and myself in particular, thought Brody Grundy will go for this. What I will say is if there is a glimmer of hope for Brody Grundy and the Pies, it is that as Ben Brown goes to ground, he does try and kick the ball on his right boot, and he misses the footy, but it's that sort of gravitational swing or that momentum that Brown almost sort of contributes to his fall that might possibly be an area that Collingwood could explore in their defence. If he gets a week and they contest it at the tribunal, the one sort of avenue of hope you could say is that Ben Brown, just before he goes to ground, he sort of tries to kick the ball, and that changes his balance sort of pretty significantly. So while Brody Grundy still tackles him to the ground, that might be the one key area which could open up, some possibility of a challenge if it is contested by Collingwood fellas. So that will be an interesting one over the next 24 hours. Hey, the jungle drums are beating about Dustin Martin. We've said this a lot over the past couple of months, really. But I think he's in a position now where he is happy to accept the Richmond offer.
Really?
A 6-year setup, $1 to $1.2 million. It is just the jungle drums. I mean, we're not hearing Neil Balm or Dan Richardson sort of thump their chest about this. But I'm getting pretty clear messages that he'll be staying at Richmond. I'll be very surprised if he goes elsewhere.
He's not going anywhere.
No, you agree with that, Duck?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a bit of talk during the week that maybe North Melbourne was still confident, but I'm pretty certain now that Dusty Martin will be at Punt Road, which would be a good call, Roosie, because of the footy he's played this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a great environment.
Look, he's been a terrific player, obviously, but I think from a Richmond point of view, they look a team that's really got their act together. Duck, I'm a big Lepich fan as well.
Yep.
Sorted out their football department. Dimmer's done a great job. Young talent. Not too many old players at Richmond, is there?
No.
So they look like they're really, with their game style, their coaching, their footy department, and clearly he's going to get really well paid. So I think that'd be a great result for football and a great result for Dusty and Richmond if that happens.
Would it be foolish to leave? Sorry, Schwartz. Would it be foolish to leave, Duck?
Yeah, I've said before I think he would be. He's not leaving, so I'm not... but it would if he did, it'd be foolish, but he's not.
Two reasons why a player would think about leaving, considering the form that he's been playing: finals and potentially a premiership, and money. Well, Richmond, they're on track to play finals this year, and he's going to get really well paid. So for Dusty to leave Richmond, it would have had to have been a ridiculously big offer.
Yeah, from a Richmond perspective, Roosie, is 1.2, is that almost getting to the tipping point? Like, clubs can, you only want to pay your players so much, particular one player, because then it starts to affect your depth, a bit like maybe Lance Franklin at Sydney. Is sort of 1.2 the limit, you reckon?
I think the worry for the clubs at the moment, and I'm not suggesting Dusty because I don't know the machinations that, but the worry for the clubs at the moment is, I think less and less players are doing what perhaps Geelong happened at Geelong, what happened at Hawthorn, and saying they're not actually testing the water back then. They're saying, well, we're in a window. We want to stay together. I want Ruffy to play. I want Hodgie. I want get Sean Burgoyne in. I think the landscape swung a little bit. So that's the danger for the clubs now, where you are really starting to look at your top-end players and saying, do they fit in? In the past, the players have more gone to the club and said, look, yeah, I'm not going to test the water. What's the most you can play me? I want to win premiership. So, Doug, I think the landscape's changed a little bit from a from a manager and player point of view. Again, not specifically talking about Dusty, but more in relation to the AFL landscape.
Full credit to Dustin Martin, though. We've seen in recent years players, some players have struggled with the scrutiny going on about possibly changing clubs, possibly staying at clubs. Geez, it hasn't worried him, has it? He's having an unbelievable season.
He hasn't cared. And whilst that, he's been juggling the visits to New Zealand to see his father, who's deported out of the
Tigers
country.
Have managed that really well, though.
I think
they deserve a lot of credit for that. Agreed. They've understood it. They recognise the significance of the father-son relationship, and I think they've accommodated that. And I think that's also reflected in the way that Dusty's been able to play.
Should the federal police let him back into the country on Brownlow night?
Roosie?
I see Dusty all the time. He's a terrific young kid. I mean, without talking specifics around, I don't know his dad. I think I met him once. I mean, the father-son is clearly it's a very, very strong relationship. So, taking your neutral hat and not knowing any about the legalities or anything like that, clearly you'd love to see, if Dusty does win the Brownlow medal, you'd love to see his father being there.
I had the opportunity of spending a day with Dusty and his dad in Dusty's first year for the Rising Star, and I remember speaking to Shane, and lovely fella. He's one of those blokes, like, you walk in, admittedly, and you look at him and he's got the tattoos and he's a massive man, you think, crikey, this bloke could snap me in half if he wanted to. I think that when I see a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going to say. You got him before me.
But there's something that really has stuck in my mind, and this is, I don't know, Dusty's been in the system probably 7 years now. He said, I don't really know much about the game, Mark, but every time I go and there's 44 players out on the ground, I spend the whole game watching one player and one player only, and that's my son. And it's just struck me at this time. He didn't know much about the game, but he just loved what his son was doing and where his son had come from and what his son was achieving. So, you know, clearly, hopefully someone can sort something out.
And whatever happens in terms of that decision, it could be an emotional night for Dusty, because he clearly has been through a lot on that front. So it'd be interesting on Brownlow night if he does receive the medal.
It'd be a great interview. It'll be a great interview, and I'm sure Bruce McAvaney will be charged with that, because I think people have a certain impression about Dusty Martin, and when you speak to him away from the cameras, I think he's a little bit different to how people expect. So it'd be a great interview. Just to see him speak there if he won the Brownlow, I think it'd be worth tuning in just for that.
Thirdly, and this is a one that we've been talking a lot about this year, obviously, is Nathan Buckley. Now, I think a lot of people in the media have thought that he will not be coaching Collingwood beyond this season. They've obviously had a disappointing year, not making finals also. Now, speaking to people in clubland and across the industry this week, it does feel like that's shifted a little bit, or swung a tiny bit, potentially back into Nathan Buckley's favour. Now, they've got three games to go. Port Adelaide next week in Adelaide, Geelong, and then Melbourne. Now, if they can not suffer a really bad loss and be competitive and maybe pinch a win or two in over those final three games, I would not be surprised to see Nathan Buckley retained, and yet the club conducts sweeping changes at assistant coaching level and also in the recruiting team. They're obviously doing a massive review of the club at the minute.
Do the last three results affect that or not?
Well, I think it plays a part. I think their competitiveness over the past sort of 3 to 4 weeks is a factor. I still think his future hangs in the balance, but I think there is still a live option or a chance that he could be at the club next year. Shwada, you're nodding.
I was nodding at something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that?
I don't think there's any doubt that the players are playing for the coach. Yeah. I think the way that they've gone about their footy, there've been a couple of bad losses, but look, I've got this view that, you know, Nathan Buckley may be the right man, but they may not have had the right support around Bucks to be a good coach. Damien Hardwick is coaching better now, yet there was a big question mark over him at the end of last year. Mark Thompson, with the Brian Cook review, was potentially out the door, but they stayed the course. And, you know, I think that it's always the easy option is to get rid of the coach. But if you're going to get rid of the coach, you want to make sure you have a better coach or someone with more skills that you've got lined up.
And the issue there, Howie, is that Alistair Clarkson seems committed to Hawthorn. John Longmire, very committed to Sydney. So the blockbuster
our man's
in Honolulu.
I think if you're relying on, in answer to I think what you said, if you're relying on the next 3 weeks, they're doing it wrong. I mean, the body of work, he's been coaching now, Jay-Z, for how long?
6 years.
This is 6 years. So if you're relying on the next 3 weeks to determine whether he can coach or not, well, you're kidding yourself.
Do you reckon Eddie already knows?
Well, I think the internal review that's going on there would factor in the next three games 1% of the decision. Yep. The decision should have and already is possibly been made, other than the fact, and this is perfectly legitimate on the back of the discussion we had with the contracts with players. They may want to get to the end of the season, say, well, he's contracted till October 31. We may, I think it's unlikely, we may sit him down then, look at his blueprint, where does he want to take the football club, and see who else may be available. That's entirely possible as well.
Spot on, Ruzic.
You came up with your list, didn't you? I like a scarf. I'm not afraid to walk around with an umbrella.
Yep.
Green tea, not afraid to have a couple of those
can't
every now and again.
Can't gel in your hair, can't dye your hair.
I'm not a fan of the Jerry Seinfeld look. And is it Dylan Ruse that's the fashion policeman within the Ruse household?
They both rate themselves
Dylan
very
and,
highly. Dylan and Tyler.
And Tyler.
Massively.
MJ's got an incriminating photo. It's either a very thick wallet full of an extraordinary amount of money, but under no circumstances, Jay-Z, should you ever have the wallet in the front pocket of the jean.
Right.
And our man, Ruzy, is that a wallet in the front pocket?
Yeah.
Where do you put it, though? No, mate, your back pocket. Put it in the back pocket.
Lots of 50s.
Mate, back pocket, Ruzy. You don't walk around
thick.
With the wallet in the front pocket.
I might have to get a list.
It's not
a
good
to get
look.
The boys just to write some
mate,
stuff down.
Mate, you earn more than any of us put together. You could just splash a bit of cash.
I don't know about that. It feels uncomfortable. You like sit on it, you get a crook back.
Only when it's that big. Only when it's that big.
Yeah, well,
most of us don't
Georgie,
feel it.
Georgie Costanza puts it in the front pocket.
Look at that.
Hey.
Oh, dear.
Oh, crikey.